the Domaine des Gachetiers. It's this remarkable chateau in the Salon region of France.
Right.
And its history spans from the 16th century right up to today. Quite a stretch.
It really is. And that's what we'll unpack in this deep dive, the incredible journey of this estate. We'll look at how it's been a silent witness to so much history, full of mystery, full of memory.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, we're going to uncover layers of, you know, architectural changes, some really surprising technological innovations, things that were genuinely ahead of their time.
Oh, true.
And also its remarkable resilience, especially through some, well, pretty turbulent times in history.
Okay, so our mission here is to take you on this journey through its hidden passages, its documented changes. Basically extracting the best insights from the source material you've provided.
That's the plan.
Offering you a shortcut, really, to understanding how places like this, these chateaux, embody that whole sweep of history.
Mm-hmm.
So diving in, maybe the best place to start is the name itself. Gachetiers. You mentioned its origin is a bit obscure.
It really is, yeah. It appears in these old, barely readable documents as something like Gachetiers. It's quite strange.
Gachetiers, okay.
But what's compelling is that we have early records, like a mention of a Seigneur de Moncel et Gachetiers back in 1599.
Wow, 1599.
Right, so that confirms its identity was established centuries ago. This place has really deep roots in the Salon lands, and it evolved, becoming this sort of autonomous unit. It even had its own intendant, basically a resident manager by the early 17th century.
An intendant, right?
Yeah, even while its owners, who might be noble or bourgeois, often led these rather itinerant lives moving around.
Right, you mentioned that. Can you just imagine them?
Yeah.
Moving between multiple homes, packing up everything, furniture, tapestries, silver.
An army of domestics.
Exactly, the whole household on the move. And what's really remarkable, you said, is how much of that original layout from the 16th century,
mm-hmm.
the moats, gardens, commons, the barn, outbuildings, has actually survived all this time.
It's astonishing, isn't it? It really speaks volumes about that foundational design.
It really does.
So if we zoom out a bit, the estate enters this really significant phase of renewal in 1635 with Guillaume Cornuel.
Cornuel. Okay, who was he?
Well, he was a big deal. Treasurer of extraordinary wars from 1628, so a man of finance, of affairs.
Right.
And his wife was Anne Bigeaud, who was apparently a figure in the era's salons précieux, those influential literary sort of intellectual gatherings.
Oh, okay. So power couple at time.
You could say that. And Cornuel undertook this major reconstruction of the chateau between 1643 and 1645. We actually know this quite precisely thanks to recent dendrochronological analysis.
Dendrochronology, dating the tree rings in the wood, right?
Exactly. Dating the timbers they use.
So he didn't just repair things. He really reshaped it, adding two new pavilions.
He did. One was a chapel dedicated to the Virgin and St. Anne, and the other was for habitation, for living space.
Okay, that's quite a project for just 2 years back then. What was the idea behind that? What sort of look was he going for?
Well, it seems he was aiming for balance and symmetry, very characteristic of the classical period that was emerging.
Oh, okay.
Adding those two pavilions created this architectural harmony that was very fashionable. And the Gachetiers stayed with the Cornwell family line until 1730.
And then?
Yeah.
Another change of hands.
Yes. Then it was bought by Thoinard de Jouy. He was a fermier général.
A tax collector for the king, essentially.
Yeah.
Very powerful figures.
Extremely powerful. And his family, the Thoinard de Jouy, held on to it until the early 19th century.
So you see this pattern, right? Prominent families leaving their mark. And then, in 1836, the Fricon family steps in.
Yeah.
And they seem to be the ones who really gave the chateau the look it has today.
That's right. They initiated this vast campaign of transformation. They brought in some quite notable architects, Benjamin Ricard from Orléans, Louis Parent from Paris.
Big names.
Yeah. They added that imposing staircase you see now and a hot greenhouse in 1867. But they weren't just about grand architectural statements.
Oh.
No, they also focused on modernizing the estate itself. They used renowned local artisans like the Charpentier brothers, who were apparently masters of garden greenhouses.
So it's this mix of grand design and practical improvement.
Exactly. It just highlights how these places were constantly evolving, reflecting the ambitions, the tastes, and the technology of each owner.
Which brings us to something else. You mentioned the innovation. Beyond the architecture, Gachetiers had some surprisingly advanced technology, especially water.
Yes. This is really fascinating. Long before, you know, modern plumbing as we think of it, it had this ingenious running water system.
How'd that work?
Well, the sophistication is pretty remarkable. They captured a natural spring or source in a high reservoir, and that fed water down into an antique hydraulic ram. It's a clever device. It uses the force of falling water to pump a portion of that water much higher without any other power source.
Wow, just using water pressure itself.
Exactly. And this thing propelled water over 200 meters away to these imposing tanks.
200 meters uphill.
Uh-huh. From there, it gravity-fed the entire domain. Water for the people living there, water for the animals.
That's incredible for the time.
It really is. These were truly avant-garde installations. Shows a real ambition to make Gachetere, you know, both self-sufficient and refined. Quite a feat.
And they kept pushing for modern amenities later on, too, right? Electricity.
They did. Though it sounds like it was a bit of a challenge initially.
How so?
Well, first, they got electricity from a wind turbine, which the source describes as capricious.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. Probably not very reliable.
Probably not. Then later, in the 1930s, they got an electrified pump. But apparently, breakdowns were frequent.
So progress didn't always run smoothly.
No, it's a good reminder that even with advanced ideas, the practical reality often advanced at its own unique pace there.
Right. So this place saw centuries of relative peace and gradual change. But then came the 20th century. How did Gachetere's fare during the really tumultuous periods like World War II?
Well, that harmony was severely disrupted then. In May 1940, the chateau was requisitioned by the French Air Force.
Okay.
But then France fell, and it was occupied by German troops until 1942. And during that time, it suffered what the records call a quasi-pillage, almost completely looted.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Such a loss. But then something quite moving happened, didn't it, to help preserve it?
Yes, this is a really interesting part of the story. In what seems like an incredible act of preservation, maybe foresight, a family member offered the chateau to the Diocese of Orléans.
The church? Why?
To host summer camps for children.
Summer camps in a looted chateau.
Apparently so. Many children, refugees, kids from Orléans, found what was described as a parenthesis of innocence within its walls, even amidst the chaos of war.
That's quite poignant. A safe haven. Was that a common thing to do with large estates then, or was this unusual?
It's hard to say how common it was, but it was certainly a very compassionate and ultimately effective way to keep the place occupied in a positive way, perhaps protecting it from further damage or requisition.
Makes sense. And you mentioned there might be hints of resistance activity nearby, too.
Yes, though it's unconfirmed. Little clues like finding half-burned tracks, leaflets dropped from London hidden in a chimney.
Wow.
It suggests the resistance might have been close. And the landscape itself, all those woods, heathlands, forgotten paths in Salone, it was a natural refuge for people hiding from the occupation.
Right. Easy to disappear there.
Exactly. And we know that not far away, in another chateau, figures like Colonel Briard, who wrote under the name Pierre Nord, Sylvia Montfort, Bernard Clavel, important resistance figures, found refuge. And further east, you had the Loris McKee, a big resistance group rooted in the Orléans forest. So the context was certainly there.
So after the war, the domain was damaged, but it survived.
It did. It stood strong, and it actually experienced a new renaissance. The parents of the current heirs, they poured their energy, their passion, their faith into its future.
How did they bring it back?
They rehabilitated parts of the chateau itself. They created two gyps, you know, self-catering holiday cottages to bring in income, presumably.
Warm.
Renovated the roof, which is always a huge undertaking for buildings like this. And they actually simplified its look, slightly removed some central dormer windows, maybe to make upkeep easier, while consolidating the chimneys.
So adapting it for the post-war reality.
Precisely. And the story keeps evolving. Even today, the farm, the agricultural part of the estate, passed to one of the children.
Yeah.
And they transformed it into a biodynamic operation.
Biodynamic farming. That's quite a modern approach.
It is. Very holistic, ecological, ethical. It's become this sort of emblem of an enlightened return to the land. They raise these robust, proud Solanot sheep there now.
From 16th century nobles to biodynamic sheep farming. That's quite a journey.
Isn't it? What's really striking is how Gachetere just continues to be carried forward by the, I don't know, the breath of those who've loved it and passed it on. It feels like this continuous whisper of history, memory, and renewal right there in the heart of Salone.
So when you step back and look at the whole story of Gachetere, what's the big takeaway for you? What does it all mean?
Well, for me, it's a powerful reminder that history isn't just dates and names in a book. It's etched into the very stones of places like this.
Mm-hmm.
You see the noble lives, the wartime refuge, the surprising innovation, and now even modern sustainability. It's all layered there.
Yeah, it really shows how these grand places aren't static monuments. They're in constant dialogue with everything around them. Mm-hmm. Personal ambitions, technology, war, ecology.
Exactly. It shows history as a continuous process of reimagining and re-inhabiting. Gastières really stands as this profound testament to continuity and adaptation.
A place that absorbs the echoes of centuries, but keeps transforming.
Keeps transforming, yeah. Remaining this vibrant, living entity, not just a museum piece. It's managed to evolve while keeping its unique soul, I think.
That's a great way to put it. So this deep dive leaves us, and you listening, with maybe a final thought to consider.
Mm-hmm.
How many other silent histories are just waiting to be uncovered in the places you walk by every single day? What might they reveal about resilience, about innovation, about the enduring human spirit that's embedded really in the fabric of our world?